Quinn sipped coffee from the cup of a thermos and stared out of the windshield. Strange uncapped a bottle of spring water and drank deeply from the neck. "Me and Juana broke up."
"What's that?"
said Strange. He had been thinking of Janine and Lionel.
"I said, me and Juana are through."
"That's too bad, man." Strange shifted his position behind the wheel. "That's a wrong move, letting a together young lady like that get away from you. Did it have anything to do with your color difference?"
"It did."
Quinn tried to smile. "Anyway, like my old man used to say, women are like streetcars. You miss one, and another one comes along sooner or later, right?"
"Sounds good.
You put on a good face, but you don't see too many streetcars rolling down the street looking like Juana. And you don't find too many with her heart, either."
"I know it."
Quinn looked across the bench at Strange. "Since you've given me the benefit of a lifetime of wisdom..."
"Go ahead."
"When are you going to marry Janine?"
"Marry her? Shit, Terry, I'm long past thinking about marrying anybody."
Strange capped his bottle and looked down at his lap.
"Anyway, she deserves better than me. But thanks for the advice, yeah."
"Just trying to help."
"So, you got a father.
You know, that's one of the first personal things you've told me in the time I've known you.
You alive?"
"My parents are both dead.
I got a brother out in the Bay Area who I almost never hear from.
What about you?"
"It's just my mom now."
"No brothers or sisters?"
"I had a brother. He'd been gone 31 years.
"That was about the time you left the force, right?"
"That's right," said Strange.
He didn't say anything after that.
"Here they come,"
said Quinn as the four tourists approached from the east.
"Paul Kettle and his son. You got a full tank?"
"Yeah."
"They don't exactly look like they come from around here. I got a feeling we're in for a long ride."
They drove out of the city to the Beltway, then hit 270 North. The Taurus, a nondescript vehicle to begin with, had the same basic body style as half the other cars on the road.
"You don't have one of those homing devices in this thing?" said Quinn.
"Yeah. Let me just go ahead and bring up their vehicle on the bat screen."
"I figured you know that you got everything else. All those things you hang on your belt line and those night vision goggles you got in that bag back there. You got those out of a cereal box or something?"
"Don't go making fun of my NVDs, man."
"What are we going to do when we get there?"
"Wherever they're going, that's where we're going to find Chris Wilson's sister."
"Because some junkie snitch told you?"
"You go with what you got."
The traffic lessened as cars got off the highway at the suburban exits of Gaithersburg, Germantown, and Darrenstown, the innermost fringes of the new megalopolis that was Washington, D.C. Strange eased off the gas and kept the Lumina farther back than it had been. 10 miles later, he saw the right turn signal flare on the Ford up ahead.
"We lose them?" said Quinn.
"I don't think so."
They were on a long curve that ran along open country and then dense forest. When they came out of the curve and hit a straightaway, the Taurus was up ahead. The driver had parked it at a gate of some kind on a gravel path cutting a break in the woods.
"Drive past them. Don't even slow down."
"I look like Danny Glover to you? I'm in charge of this investigation, Terry, in case you've forgotten."
"Drive past and punch it, man!
What the fuck do you think I was gonna do?"
They blew past the Taurus, the short one, standing at the wooden gate and putting a key into a padlock. Glanced up as they passed, giving them a brief and unfocused hard look.
"Boy, it's cross-eyed," said Quinn. "You see that?"
"Uh-huh. Notice when I was looking at him through the lens. The older one has the same look, too. Got to be his daddy, right?"
They went into another long curve running beside the woods. Strange pulled over on one shoulder, cut the engine, and grabbed his day pack off the back seat.
"Let's go."
They walked into the woods, dense with oak and pine, past a no trespassing sign affixed to a tree and peppered with buckshot. Quinn said,
"This way,"
and pointed northeast. There seemed to be a trail of sorts, and they followed it.
"Looks like there's a break in the woods up ahead."
"I see it. But we can't get too close to them if that's where they are. This time of year, there's no foliage on these trees. We got no cover."
"Right.
And watch where you walk. Don't go snapping too many branches, because the sound travels in the open country. This isn't the city, Danny. I mean, Derek."
"Funny," said Strange. Quinn looked over his shoulder and made a halting sign with his palm. Both of them stopped walking. Quinn looked around and motioned with his chin to a deer blind that had been built in the low branches of an oak. He pointed to the blind, and Strange nodded his head. Quinn went up first.
using the ladder of wooden blocks that had been nailed to the trunk of the tree. Strange tossed his bag up to Quinn and followed. The platform was narrow and shifted a little under their weight.
"This gonna hold us?"
said Strange, keeping his voice low.
"I guess we'll find out."
They looked through the trees to a clearing about 150 yards away. They could see the father and son getting out of the Ford, parked between a pickup and a motorcycle in a cluttered yard. Past the vehicles was a large barn with a ramshackled house beside it. Strange looked through the lens of the AE-1, snapping photographs of the sun as he took a gym bag from out of the trunk.
"I can't see anything," said Quinn. "My eyes are going on me, man."
"Get a set of 10x50 binos in the bag, help yourself." Quinn dug the binoculars out and adjusted them for his nose and eyes. The two men headed for the house, the son carrying the gym bag, looking back once into the woods before both of them stepped into the leaning porch and went through the front door.
"She's in there, I expect."
They waited, listening to the call of crows, twig snapping, the wind moving the tops of the tall trees. Squirrels chased each other in the high branches of the oaks. They waited some more, and neither of them spoke.
"Here they come,"
said Strange. The two men came out of the house. Sandra Wilson was beside the father.
"That's her."
The father took her arm as they descended the porch steps. Even at this distance, Strange could see that she was near death. Beneath the coat she wore, her shoulders were like garden shears, and her eyes were hollowed out above sunken cheeks. Now they were all standing in the yard, and the sun was gesturing wildly toward the woods, the anger in his voice carrying through the trees, reaching Quinn and Strange. The older man was talking to his son in a quiet way, trying to calm him down. Then the son grabbed hold of Sandra Wilson's arm and shook her violently. Her head kind of flopped around on her shoulders, and that was when the father took 3 steps forward and shoved the son in the chest, sending him down to the gravel and dirt. The son got up slowly, not saying a word, not looking at his father anymore or at Sandra. The father took hold of Sandra gently and walked her back into the house. Strange was thinking about the photograph packet on his desk once again. He pictured himself in Chris Wilson's room, the items on the dresser and in his cigar box. He saw himself talking to Wilson's mother, the pictures hung on the wall. One picture. Wilson had a stub from a grocery store, Safeway, I think. In the cigar box on his dresser, there was a camera on that dresser, too. So there are some pictures he never got around to picking up. Also, if he was trying to find his sister, if we've been covering the same tracks he's been making, then he probably has some kind of documentation related to what he was doing. I'm thinking that maybe I know where that is. What are we waiting on, then?
It's just that I hate to leave her. You gotta look at her, man. She doesn't have much time. We can't do anything today.
You're right, said Strange. But I'm coming back. Strange lifted the framed photograph of Larry Brown and the young Chris Wilson and placed the photograph on Wilson's bed. As Strange had suspected, the frame covered a hole of sorts in the wall. A tablet-sized notebook was wedged inside the hole among chips of particle board, covered with a thick coat of dust. Leona Wilson had said that Chris had become visibly upset when she'd gone to straighten the picture. From everything Strange knew, Chris Wilson seemed to be the type of young man who would need an awful good reason to rise up at his own mom. Whatever Wilson had found, and Strange was certain that what he'd found was reflected in the notebook, he had kept it from his mother, his girlfriend, and the department as well. Strange stashed the notebook in his day pack, along with the ticket stub from Safeway. The stub was redeemable at the Piney Branch Road location in Tacoma, D.C., near his church. In the living room, Leona Wilson peered out from behind her parted curtains at the Lumina parked on the street. She released the curtain and turned as Strange walked into the room.
"Did you find what you were looking for?"
"I did."
"Then you're making progress."
"Yes, I am."
Strange slung the date back over his shoulder.
"Miss Wilson?"
"Yes."
"I believe I've located your daughter."
Leona Wilson's lip trembled up into a smile.
"Thank you. Thanks the good Lord."
She rubbed her hands together in front of her waist.
"Is she... what is her health?"
"She's going to need help, Mrs. Wilson. Professional help to get her off the kind of trouble she's found. These programs and clinics, you can get a list through the church.
You need to set that up now, understand? Do it today.
Why?
Because I plan on bringing Sandra home. Strange headed for the door.
Who is that white man in the car out front? I'm afraid I can't make anything out but his color without my glasses.
An independent I've been using.
Is he helping you with this?
Uh-huh. Strange opened the door.
I'll say a prayer for you this Sunday, Mr. Strange.
Yes, ma'am. He stepped outside and stood for a moment on the concrete porch. He'd gone and promised this woman something, and now he'd have to see it through.
I saw the Wilson woman looking at me through the curtains, said Quinn. She recognized me?
She wouldn't recognize her own face in the mirror without her glasses on, said Strange. He blew a late yellow on the Georgia, catching a red halfway through the intersection. He passed Buchanan and continued north.
Hey, you missed your house.
I'm dropping you off at your place, Terry. When I get close like this, I need to think everything out my own self.
You're not going to cut me out of this now, are you?
I'll phone you later tonight. After he dropped off Quinn, Strange stopped off at the Safeway on Piney Branch. When the woman behind the glass handed him the packet of photographs, she said,
"These been here a long time, Mr. Wilson."
And Strange said, "Thanks for keeping him safe." He drove back to the car rental on Georgia, dropped off the Lumina, and picked up his Caprice, which he had left on the lot. Back in his row house, he fed Greco, showered, changed into sweats, went into his office and had a seat at his desk. There was a message from Lydell Blue in his machine. The numbers on the cruiser matched up with a Crown Vic driven by a street cop named Adonis Delgado. Strange wrote down Delgado's name. Strange angled his desk lamp down and studied the photographs he had picked up at Safeway. Halfway through them, his blood jumped.
I'll be goddamned.
He opened the notebook and read the 10 log-style pages of text, detailing by date, time, and location the progress of Chris Wilson's own investigation. Strange reached for the phone, lifted the receiver, then replaced the receiver in its cradle. In an envelope in his file cabinet, he found the taped conversations he had recorded. He listened to them through. Strange sat back in his chair. He reached down and patted Greco's head. He folded his arms and stared at the ceiling. He exhaled slowly, sat forward, and pulled the telephone toward him. He dialed a number, and on the third ring, a voice came into the other end of the line.
Hello?
Derek here. You remember which house is mine? Sure. Better get on over here, man. I'll be right there, said Quinn. Cherokee Coleman pressed in on his cell and laid the phone on the green blotter of his desk.
They're here.
Big ass Angelo adjusted his shades so that they sat low on his nose. We ready for them to finish this thing?
Tomorrow night. We've been selling this shit faster than I thought we would. We'll send our boys out there to Shitkickersville and let them bring back the last load. Bring back our money, too. Doom all those motherfuckers out there so I can tell my Colombian brothers I went and avenged the deaths of their own.
Coleman got up from his chair and walked to the office window. Two men got out of a black Maxima and were met by several younger men.
Delgado got himself a brand new shirt. Got some nice rims on it, too.
He just wants what we got, said Angelo.
Let him keep wanting it. The want is what makes this world go round, Black.
How's his partner look?
Boy's got some teeth.
Wilbur, said Angelo, whinnying like a horse and using his foot dragging it front to back on the floor to count to three.
Coleman and Angelo were still laughing as the two men entered the office.
Something funny? Said Delgado. Angelo here was just telling me a joke.
How you doing, Bucky?
Said big-ass Angelo to the second man.
I told you not to call me that. My name's Eugene Franklin, understand?
Quinn sat on the hardback chair in Strange's living room, a table-sized notebook and an empty bottle of beer on the floor at his feet, the package of photographs clenched in his hand. There were two photographs of Eugene Franklin and Adonis Delgado in the bunch, wearing street clothes and walking from Eugene's civilian car to the row house of Cherokee Coleman. Quinn had yet to read the contents of the notebook, but Strange had filled him in on the pertinent details.
You want another beer, man?
Said Strange, who sat on a slightly worn living room sofa.
No, I'd better not.
Quinn's eyes were blown out of his pale face and jaw muscles bounced beneath his tight skin.
Play me that tape again? The part where Eugene was talking in Erica's.
Strange played the tape. Eugene's voice filled the silence of the room.
I saw where Wilson's gun was headed. I saw it in his eyes what he planned to do. There's no doubt in my mind. If Terry hadn't shot Wilson, Wilson would have shot me.
Strange hit the stop button on the micro recorder.
Wilson would have shot me? Franklin slipped right there.
Quinn nodded obtusely at the recorder.
Play the tape with me. The first conversation we had down at the scene on D Street.
We already did this once.
Play it,
said Quinn. Strange popped in another tape. He queued up the spot where he knew Quinn wanted to hear. What do you do next?
I've got my gun on the aggressor. I yell for him to drop his weapon and lie face down on the street. He yells something back. I can't really hear what he's saying because Eugene's yelling over him.
Strange stopped the tape. Your partner was yelling over him because he didn't want you to hear what Wilson was saying. He was adding to the confusion, and he didn't want you to know that Wilson was a cop.
Play the other part.
What happened when he looked at you, Quinn?
It was only for a moment. He looked at me, and then at Gene, and something bad crossed his face. I'll never forget it. He was angry at us, at me and Gene. He was more than angry. His face changed to the face of a killer. He swung his gun in our direction, then...
He pointed his gun at you?
Not directly. He was swinging it, like I say. The muzzle of it swept across me, and he had that look on his face. There wasn't any doubt in my mind. I knew he was going to pull the trigger. Eugene screamed my name, and I fired my weapon.
That's enough, said Quinn. Strange stopped the recorder. Here's the way I see it. Your partner was driving the cruiser that night. Y'all coming up on Chris Wilson like that, it wasn't an accident. Franklin turned down D Street because it was a setup. He knew Kane was going to lure Chris Wilson there. He knew it wouldn't take much for Kane to get Wilson to draw his gun. Or for me to fire mine. Maybe. The fact remains your partner was involved. We got the photographs in Chris Wilson's notebook. That young man did some really fine police work putting it all together.
I just don't want to believe it, Derek.
Chris Wilson wasn't looking to hurt you, Terry. He was pointing his gun at a sold-out cop, a dirty cop who was in the pocket of a drug dealer who had put his sister in a junk house. You understand what I'm telling you, man?
Yes.
All right, then. Now, who's Adonis Delgado?
Big, badass cop. He was sitting at the bar of Erica's the day we spoke to Eugene.
Quinn stood out of his chair. He lifted his leather off the back where he'd hung it and put it on.
Where are you going?
To get the rest of it.
You need my help?
This one's me. He turned as he reached the front door. Don't go to sleep.
I'm going to see you again tonight?
Yeah. I'm going to bring something back for you, too. Eugene Franklin had a one-bedroom apartment across the road from the Main Avenue waterfront in Southwest. Franklin, like many single cops, considered his apartment little more than a place to eat, sleep, and watch TV. Franklin heard a knock and went to the door of his apartment and opened it. Quinn was standing in front of him.
Hey!
Said Quinn, a smile on his face. Franklin could see that Quinn's smile was not really a smile, but more of a grimace. A forced smile that had pain in it, and something worse than pain. Franklin saw the automatic come up from beneath the waistband of Quinn's jeans. Franklin stepped back from the doorway as Quinn swung the barrel of the gun viciously, its shape a blur cutting through the fluorescent glare of the hall. The gun connected at Franklin's temple, and the room spun instantly as he stumbled back. Franklin's feet were gone beneath him.
He began to fall, and as he fell through the dimming light, the gun streaked toward him, and this time he barely felt the blow.
At the end, he saw his partner's face, ugly and angry and afraid, and Franklin loved him then. Falling into a soft bed of night, Franklin felt only relief. Quinn stood in the center of Eugene Franklin's living room, the automatic held loosely in his hand. Franklin sat on the couch, his head tilted back, holding a damp towel to his temple. The towel was pink where the blood of a deep gash had seeped through. Quinn had placed a yellow legal pad on the coffee table before him, and set a pen on top of the pad.
How'd you turn, Jean?
How?
Repeated Franklin.
Delgado drew you in.
Yeah. Used to see him down at Erica's all the time. In there every night, drinking, talking mad shit, and then going home alone.
Delgado, he was like me.
Neither one of us had many friends or was getting any play, so we got to talking, Adonis and me.
What'd you talk about?
This and that, you know. Went from one thing to the other until it came to this other thing. Delgado was telling me how a man with some money in his pocket didn't have to worry about finding women. They'd find him.
How'd it go to the next level?
He started talking about Cherokee Coleman's operation down off Florida. How Cherokee was never going to see no time, how no one could touch his ass because he was too smart. That the operation would keep going on as long as there was a market for drugs, and fuck all those junkies anyway. They weren't nothing but the low end of Darwin's theory. And then he told me how he was making a little extra on the side. How he figured out that if Cherokee was going to be all that, and no one was going to do a goddamn thing about it, why didn't he, Adonis, deserve to get some too? It wasn't no big deal, he said. A load came in twice a month to Coleman's, and twice a month Delgado cruised the perimeter of the area during drop-off day and made sure there wasn't anything going on out there in the way of interference, local or federal law.
Why tell you? Why did he need to cut you in?
Because he couldn't always be there. And because they had a problem that Delgado couldn't or didn't want to handle on his own. Of course, I didn't know what the problem was when I got in.
Chris Wilson.
Franklin's eyes moved to the floor.
That's right.
His sister had got hooked up with Ricky Kane. He followed Kane's trail the same way y'all did, and it took him to Coleman's. On one of those trips, Kane went into the office with Sandra Wilson, and when he came out, he was alone. Sandra was Coleman's woman, just like that, and it pushed Wilson way over the edge.
You were in at this point.
Right about then, yeah.
It was easy.
Just like Delgado said, wasn't nothing but driving around the block a couple of times, twice a month. I didn't see anything all that wrong with it at the time.
Bullshit!
Just trying to explain it to you how it was.
Bullshit.
What happened next? Wilson was surveilling now in his street clothes, by the junkyard and on the corners. I guess that's when he got those pictures of me. He knew he couldn't go up against Coleman's army himself, and he didn't know who to trust anymore inside the department. He threatened Delgado outside of Erica's one night.
He threatened me.
You and Delgado went to Coleman?
Delgado did.
They decided to get rid of Chris Wilson. For Delgado, it was easy. By then, I'd found out he'd killed before for Coleman. It didn't matter what I knew at that point. I was damn near one of them. He wanted me all the way in, locked in for real.
They wanted you to kill Wilson.
That's right. Franklin dropped the towel at his feet. A drop of blood burst from his cut and trickled down his cheek. They had Kane call Wilson out? Franklin nodded. Kane told Wilson he'd gotten his sister back, to meet him on D Street at a certain time. They knew Wilson would lose it when he got there and found Kane alone. I drove us up on the scene. You know what happened next.
You tell me, Eugene. I never shot a man, Terry. I had my gun out, and I had it pointed at him, but
why didn't you shoot him, Eugene?
Because you shot him first.
Quinn looked down at the gun in his hand.
You knew I would.
No, I didn't know. But I knew you were more capable of it than I was. And I knew...
What?
I knew you. I knew what you'd see when you saw Chris Wilson holding a gun on Ricky Kane. Quinn raised his gun to his hip, pointing it at Franklin on the couch. Franklin's lip trembled, and his eyes filled with tears.
You won't do it, Terry.
Although there's a part of me that wishes you would.
You're right,
said Quinn as he moved the muzzle of the Glock, pointing it at the pad on the table.
Write it out. All of it, Gene. I'm going to disgrace you to your family and your fellow cops. Everyone's going to know what a lowlife you are.
I'm sorry, man.
Fuck you, Eugene. Fuck your apologies, too.
I'd like to talk to my father before this makes the news. When are you going to tune this in? After we get the girl home, me and Strange followed those rednecks out to their property. where they're keeping her. Franklin dabbed at the cut on his temple. I'm going to be there with Delgado tomorrow night.
Why?
We're dropping off money and bringing back a load of drugs.
Thought you never had anything to do but drive around the block.
We met with Coleman earlier. Those rednecks, the Boones. Ray's the son, Earl's the father. They killed a couple of Colombian mules out at the property. Coleman wants us to kill the Boones, make himself right with the Colombians.
What about the girl?
Delgado used to hit it himself, but he still has her on his mind. He starts killing, though. I don't see him stopping until everyone's asleep.
This is going down tomorrow night?
I'm meeting Delgado at 8. That would put us there around 9. They're going to pick us up somewhere else, then drive us out to the barn.
There's a barn and a house there.
Coleman says the Boones do business in the barn.
Sandra stays in the house?
Far as I know.
Tomorrow night, you keep them all in the barn. Give me and Strange a chance to get Sandra Wilson out of the house.
What am I going to do when Delgado starts all that killing?
I don't care what you do. Whatever you decide to do, don't change what I'm going to do with this.
He picked up the legal pad with Franklin's confession. Quinn walked away. The door slammed behind him. Strange was sleeping on the couch when the doorbell buzzed. Greco's barking woke him up. Strange opened the front door after checking the peephole. Quinn stood on the porch, his breath visible in the night.
I got it,
said Quinn, holding up Franklin's confession for Strange to see. Fill me in on what I don't know, said Strange. Quinn told him everything standing there.
Tomorrow night, then.
Right. Strange hit the intercom system buzzer on his desk and spoke into its mic. Janine.
Yes, Derek.
Come in here a minute, will you? Strange leaned over, picked up a package, a padded legal-sized envelope off the floor, and placed it on his desk. In the package, addressed to Lydell Blue at the 4th District Station, was the full evidence file Strange had collected on the Wilson case. Strange had come in early that morning, made Xerox copies of the evidence, and dropped the duplicate package in the mail, addressed to himself. Next, he'd called his attorney and confirmed that his will was up to date. He had filled his attorney in on the whereabouts of his modest life insurance policy, for which he had named Janine and Lionel joint beneficiaries. Janine Baker came into the room. I'm going to be gone for the rest of the day, maybe a little bit into tomorrow.
Okay.
You need me, you can get me on my beeper.
Just like always.
That's right. Nothing unusual at all. Strange leaned forward and tapped the padded envelope on his desk. You don't hear any different from me, say by noon tomorrow? I want you to take this package here and drop it in the mailbox, understand?
Sure.
Keep it in a safe until then. There's another package like it will be coming here in the mail in a couple of days from now. When it arrives, I want you to put that one in the safe.
Okay.
Good. I guess we're all set. Strange got up from his chair, took his leather off the coat tree, and shook himself into the jacket. He walked up close to Janine and glanced at the open office door. Ran out there?
He's off on an insurance fraud thing.
Strange slipped his arms around Janine's waist and pulled her to him. He kissed her on the lips and held the kiss. She looked up into his eyes.
First time you ever did that in here, Derek.
I'm not all that good at putting things into words. Listen, I'm trying to say...
You did say it, Derek.
Still in his arms, Janine wiped her thumb across his mouth, clearing the lipstick she had left there. I need to be getting out of here. Janine watched him walk away, through the outer office and out the front door. She picked up the package off his desk and headed for the safe. Quinn put in an early shift at the bookstore, then came back to his apartment, worked out, showered, and dressed in thermal underwear, a flannel shirt, Levi jeans, and hiking boots. He paced his bedroom and found his gun and belt in the bottom drawer of his dresser. Quinn wrapped the gun belt around his waist and buckled it in front, the holster riding low and tight on the right side of his hip. He had taken the mace holder, bullet dump, pin holder, and keychain off the belt, leaving only his set for handcuffs in their case, and positioned at the small of his back. Then he holstered the Glock. The phone rang, and Quinn picked it up.
Hello?
Quinn could hear symphonic music on the other end of the line.
Derek here. I'm ready to go.
I'm ready too.
Ray Boone opened a spansel of meth and dumped its contents into a Budweiser mirror he had pulled off the wall. He used a razor blade to cut out two lines,
and snorted up the blue-speckled coarse powder. He threw his head back and felt the familiar numbness back in his throat.
"Phone's ringing, Daddy."
"I hear it," said Earl.
He had a cigarette in one hand and was playing electronic poker with the other.
"That's them."
"Then answer it, critter."
Ray lifted his cell phone off the green felt table where he sat. He spoke to one of Coleman's men briefly, then pushed the end button on the phone.
"They're down the road."
Earl nodded but did not reply. Ray had brought the heroine out to the bar because he didn't want to go back in that room more than one time tonight. He was beginning to smell something awful back there. His daddy had been right, and knowing that made Ray even more disturbed than he already had been since Edna up and left him. The weather had warmed unexpectedly, and those dead greases down in the tunnel were getting ripe. Earl picked up his six-pack cooler full of Bush, patting his coat pockets to check that he had bought his cigarettes and his .38. He and Ray left the barn. Out in the yard, Earl flicked his cigarette toward the woods. Ray went to the edge of the woods and looked into its darkness, letting the rain hit his face. Where the fuck was Edna? All right. So she'd gone into a stash and smoked it up, but now she was scared. But a day had passed, and he'd heard not one thing from her. He'd called that big-haired, smart-as-a-stump girlfriend of hers Johanna, and she claimed not to know where Edna was either. Lying-ass bitch. She had to know where Edna was. They walked to the car. Earl said, "Starting to smell back in the barn."
"I'll bury him tomorrow."
"Told you that warm weather was coming in." "You all set?" said Strange.
"Yeah."
"Raining like a motherfucker out there. Gonna be messy. But the rain'll cover a lot of noise.
And the clouds will cover our sight lines going through those woods.
My NVDs will get us through those woods."
"You and your gadgets.
Speaking of which, put this on."
He took his beeper off his hip and handed it to Quinn.
"We'll take two cars in case we don't leave at the same time."
Quinn nodded. "Otherwise, I'll meet you at the no trespassing sign on the second curve."
"Okay. But if we get separated or something..."
"I'll see you," said Quinn. "Back in D.C. Ray Boone went behind the bar and found a bottle of Jack where he'd left it, by the stainless steel sink next to the ice chest. His daddy's coat was where it always was, hung on two nails, the barrel resting on one and the trigger guard on the other, driven into the wood over the sink.
"You boys want a taste?"
he said, shouting over the George Jones coming from the Wurlitzer. Ray watched the funny-looking coon with the buck teeth, sitting glumly with a beer can in his hand at the felt-covered card table, shake his head. The other ruckhead, the big ugly one wearing the fancy running suit, didn't even acknowledge the question. Ray broke open a spatula of meth and poured it out into the bar. He didn't bother to track it out with his blade. He leaned over the bar and snorted it all up his nose.
Fuck it. He didn't care what his daddy or the rughead cops thought. He was going to celebrate the end of this thing tonight.
"Woo!" said Ray. "Tonight the bottle letting me down," came the vocal from the juke.
Country-ass cracker trash, thought Adonis Delgado, killing the rest of his cheap, piss-tasting beer they'd given him. First they make him lie down in the backseat of that Ford with his head in Eugene Franklin's ass, making his neck all stiff, and now he had to listen to this backward bullshit on the record machine. Browning had a throw-down automatic, a Browning 9, in his clip-on holster. He was going to enjoy pulling it. The time came. Eugene Franklin watched Earl Boone walk by him and take a seat on a stool set in front of a video game that had playing cards on its screen. Franklin reached into his coat pocket and touched the Glock 17, his service weapon, sitting loosely there. He checked his wristwatch, thinking of Quinn and Strange.
"Got some place you need to be, huh, Eugene? It's Eugene, ain't that right?"
"I'm comfortable," said Franklin, not looking into the fucked-up eyes of Ray Boone. "I'm fine."
"I'm not fine," said Delgado.
"I need to use the bathroom."
"Piss outside like we've been doing all night."
"I gotta take a shit. Ain't you got a toilet in this place?"
"Got one in the back, but it's broke," said Earl.
"Use the one in the house."
Delgado saw the father turn his head and give the son a look.
"Don't worry. I won't touch nothing. Where's it at?"
"Top of the stairs." "Be right back," said Delgado to Franklin. Franklin watched Delgado leave by the barn door. He raised the beer can to his mouth and was thankful for the loud noise and the sound of the rain hitting the roof. He could feel his teeth chattering lightly against the can. Quinn and Strange hiked through the woods. Strange had his goggles on, and Quinn stayed close behind him. The wind and water whipped against their faces. They wore layers of clothing under their coats and the thin black gloves on their hands, but it wasn't enough. They made it to the area at the edge of the woods and dropped their day packs on the wet brown needles and the dense stand of pine. A spot lamp mounted above the barn door illuminated the yard, and the heavy rain slashed through its wide triangle of light. In the house, a dim light shone beyond the darkness of a bedroom window. Strange dropped his gargles in his bag and withdrew a short crowbar. Quinn reached into his bag and pulled the gun belt. He stood and buckled it, unsnapping its holster. Strange looked up at the second floor of the house. He looked back at Quinn, dripping wet, his long hair slick and stuck to the sides of his face.
I guess she's in there. And I guess the rest of them are in the barn.
Lots of guessing.
Anyway, we're going to find out. Put that beeper on that gun belt, man.
Quinn clipped it to his left hip.
Okay, it's on. If I get back here and I don't see you, I'm going to keep right on going with Sandra, you understand? I don't like leaving you, man, but we accomplished one thing here tonight, is to get the girl back to her mother, Terry.
I hear you.
I get Sandra back to my vehicle, I'm going to phone you from my cell. That beeper goes off as your signal that I got her out safe, hear? You get out then, but only then. Till you hear from me, you hold them in that barn.
I'll hold them till hell freezes over, or you say different.
God damn, you are something, man.
Get going, Derek.
Strange went into the yard, zigzagging combat style through the light. He got up onto the leaning porch of the house, ready to use the crowbar in the jamb of the door. But the knob turned in his hand, and Strange opened the door and walked inside. Quinn removed his coat. He dropped it on the day pack, lying on the pine needles at his feet. Delgado stripped off his shirt and pants and left them in the heap on the floor. He got out of his briefs and dropped them atop the rest of his clothing, walking naked across the bedroom to where the girl sat, backed up against the headboard atop the sheets. His erection was fully engorged as he reached the foot of the bed.
"Come here, girl," he said to the Wilson junkie, depleted to bones and drawn skin, a mile away from the way she'd look when he'd had her the first time over in the junkyard.
"Please,"
said Sandra Wilson, her voice little more than an exhaled whimper. Delgado grabbed hold of one of her thin wrists.
"Trick-ass bitch."
Outside the bedroom, past the landing, Strange ascended the stairs.
"Where's your shadow?"
said Ray.
"You've been gone 20 minutes.
He'll be back.
"I'll get him back," said Earl, standing from the seat in front of the electronic poker game.
"I will, Daddy. I gotta drain my lily anyhow."
Earl watched his son go out the barn door. He went behind the bar to mix himself a drink, keeping an eye on the one with the horse teeth. The bottle of Jack was sitting on the sink. While his hands were down there, Earl took the Colt off the nails and racked the slide, placing the gun on its side on the stainless steel. Quinn rolled out into the yard as he saw the barn door begin to open. He drew his Glock and jacked around into the chamber, keeping the barrel pointed up beside his face. He rose slowly, watching the son, the one named Ray, go by and head for the house. For a moment, Quinn studied the rhythm in Ray's stride. Quinn silently counted to three and stepped out into the yard, walking behind Ray, closing in quickly on Ray, and then shouting, "Hold it right there!" as Ray put one foot on the porch steps. Ray stopped walking.
"Put your arms up and lace your fingers behind your head. Do it and spread your legs!"
Ray put his arms up, turning his head slightly. He was slow to spread his legs, and Quinn moved in and kicked one of Ray's legs out of the calf.
"Who the fuck are you?"
"Shut up,"
said Quinn, pressing the barrel of the Glock to the soft spot behind Ray's right ear. Quinn frisked Ray quickly, found an automatic holstered at the small of his back, pulled it, nimbly released the magazine, let it drop to the muddy earth, and tossed the body of the gun far side.
"Walk back into the barn."
Easy, said Ray.
I said walk!
Ray turned and Quinn turned with him. They moved together, the gun still at Ray's ear, and made it to the barn door. Then they were inside. Quinn speed-scanned the scene. The father was behind the bar, his eyes lazy and unfazed, his hands not visible. Eugene was sitting at some kind of card table drinking a beer. Delgado was not in sight.
Get your hands up, both of you! Don't come up with anything, or I swear to God I'll blow his shit out across the room!
Take it easy, fella,
said Earl as he slowly raised his hands. Quinn could barely hear him. The music coming from the jukebox echoed loudly in the big room.
You at the table. Lay your hands out flat in front of you.
Franklin did as he was told.
Move over to that bar, said Quinn, giving Ray a shove. Put your back up against it here.
Ray walked to the bar, stopping about 6 feet down from where his father stood on the other side. He turned and leaned his back against the bar and placed the heel of one dingo boot over the brass rail. Quinn moved the gun from father to son. He moved it to Franklin, and then quickly back to the Boones.
You, get up and pull the plug on that jukebox. Do it and get back in your seat.
Eugene Franklin got out of his chair, walked to the jukebox, got down on one knee and yanked the plug out of the receptacle. The music died instantly. Franklin walked back to his chair, sat down, and placed his hands flat on the green felt of the table. Now there was only the sound of the rain. It beat against the wood of the barn and clicked steadily on the tin roof.
Where are you?
Asked Ray.
FBI, DEA?
Whatever he is, said Earl. He's all alone.
Must be one of those agents likes to do it solo, said Ray. Cowboy, that what you are?
That's what I am, thought Quinn. They heard the muffled scream of a woman, then the rain alone, then the woman's steady, muffled scream.
You hear that, Crater?
I hear it.
Just shut your mouths.
Delgado wrapped a meaty hand through Sandra Wilson's hair and dragged her toward him across the sheets. The door burst open. Delgado turned naked. A man was rushing toward him with a crowbar raised in his hands. Delgado took the blow on his forearm and used his fist to clip the man on the ear as the man body-slammed him into the dresser. Delgado threw the man off of him, the crowbar flipping from his grasp. The man stumbled, gained his footing, and took a stance, his feet planted firmly, the fingers of his hands spread wide. Strange saw Delgado glance at his clothing heaped on the floor. Strange kicked the clothing to the side. Delgado was on him then. He led with a left jab that stung Strange's ribs, then hooked a right. Strange grunted, exploded with an uppercut connected to Delgado's jaw. It moved Delgado back a step and brought rage to his eyes. The right came furiously. The right was a blur, and it caught Strange on his cheek and knocked him off his feet. Strange rolled, came up standing, and shook the dizziness from his head. His hand found the sheath on his hip. He unsnapped it and freed the buck knife. He pulled the blade from the handle and hefted the knife in his hand. Delgado smiled from across the room. His gums were red with blood.
I'm gonna take that motherfucker from you, old man.
Take it.
Delgado bobbed, moved in, feigned a left and threw a right, putting everything into the right and aiming 3 feet behind Strange's head. Strange slipped the punch. The momentum carried Delgado through and he stumbled, slipping so that he was on one knee before Strange and looking up at him, his eyes wide and white. Strange came down violently with the knife, burying the blade into the handle in Delgado's thick neck. The blade severed his carotid artery and pierced his windpipe. A crimson fountain erupted into the room. Sandra screamed. He pulled out the knife, wiped it clean, and returned it to his sheath. Strange crossed the room and slapped Sandra hard across the face. He slapped her again. She stopped screaming and began to sob and shake. She was afraid of him, and that was good. He ripped the wool blanket off the bed and wrapped it around her shoulders. Strange picked Sandra up and carried her from the room, out into the landing and down the stairs. He managed the front door and walked out to the porch, down the steps, and out into the rain. He didn't look at the barn.
He moved quickly into the dark shelter of the trees and did not look back.
"Screaming stopped," said Ray.
"I know it,"
said Earl, looking over at Franklin.
"I told you to shut your mouths,"
said Quinn, side-glancing Franklin, seeing Eugene's right hand slip off the green of the table.
"What is it you want exactly?"
said Ray.
"Money? Drugs? Hell, boy, it's right up there on top of the bar. Get in and get gone, that's what you're here for."
Quinn said nothing.
"You gonna stand there like that all night?"
said Ray.
"Shit, boy, you gotta do something. I mean, shoot us or rob us or walk away."
The beeper sounded on Quinn's hip. No one said anything, listening to it. Then the beeping ended. Quinn began to walk backwards, still covering the men with his gun. Ray laughed, and Quinn felt the blood rise in his face.
"Look at that, Daddy. He's going back on out of here now."
"I see him,"
said Earl, the lines of his cheeks deepening from his thick smile.
"That what you gonna do, pussy boy? Just walk away?"
Quinn stopped. He stood straight and holstered his weapon. He glanced at Eugene Franklin, turned, and gave them his back. Quinn headed for the barn door. Earl picked up the Colt and slid it down the bar to his son. Ray's boot heel caught momentarily on the brass rail as he swiveled his hips. He lost a second of time, reached out for the Colt's grip, got his hand around it, and swung the muzzle toward Quinn as Earl pulled his .38.
"Hey, Terry,"
said Franklin in a quiet, even way. Quinn cleared the Glock from his holster. He crouched and spun and fired from the hip. The bar splintered around Ray. Quinn fired again, and the slug tore open Ray's shirt in the center of his chest. Ray dropped his gun and fell to the slatted wood floor. A gunshot exploded into the room. Earl's pistol jumped, and Quinn felt air and fire burn at the side of his scalp. Franklin kicked the card table over as he stood. He squeezed the trigger on his Glock 4 times, the gun jumping in his hand. Earl was thrown back into the bar mirror. The bottles on the call rack exploded around him in a shower of glass and blood. Quinn walked through the roiling gun smoke. He kicked a .38 away from Ray's corpse. He went around the bar with his gun arm locked and looked down at the father. Quinn holstered his gun.
"The girl. Strange got her.
Delgado?
If Strange got the girl, he got Delgado too. Let's go."
Quinn picked up his coat and pack in the stand of pine. He and Franklin entered the woods and headed for a row of lights on the interstate, glowing faintly up ahead. An hour later, Quinn parked the Chevelle in front of Franklin's apartment house and let the motor run.
"What now, Terry?"
"You've got a little bit of time. Strange sent a package off today to someone he trusts in the department. Chris Wilson's notebook and the photographs."
"What about my confession?"
"Strange made a copy of that." Quinn reached across Franklin and opened the glove box door. "I've got the original right here." Franklin took the yellow piece of paper from Quinn's hand. Quinn nodded, and Franklin slipped the paper into the pocket of his coat.
"Thank you, Terry."
Quinn stared through the windshield and pushed hair behind his ear, careful not to touch the tender spot where Earl Boone's bullet had grazed his scalp.
"You're not off the hook. The evidence Strange mailed in is enough to convict you. However, you want to plead your defense, that's up to you. As far as what happened tonight and the girl, ain't no one ever going to know what happened tonight or about the girl. Not from me."
Franklin swallowed. Franklin offered his hand. Quinn kept his grip tight on the steering wheel.
"All right, then," said Franklin.
He stepped out of the car and crossed the parking lot, his head lowered against the rain. Later, and for the rest of his life, Quinn would not forget Eugene Franklin's sad, odd face or the hang of his outstretched hand. Near dawn, Derek Strange exited the house of Leona Wilson, closing the front door softly behind him. The rain had ended. He stood on the concrete stoop and breathed the cold morning air, turning his collar up against the chill. Down on the street, parked behind his Caprice, was a pretty blue Chevelle. A long-haired young white man sat behind the wheel.
"Thank you, Lord," said Strange.
He locked eyes with Quinn and smiled.
That evening, the suicide of Eugene Franklin made the 6 o'clock news. A resident in the apartment next door had heard a gunshot around noon and phoned the police. A letter, written in longhand, had been neatly placed on the coffee table before him. On the 11 o'clock news, Franklin's suicide was eclipsed by the discovery of a mass homicide on a wooded property at the east central edge of Montgomery County. 6 bodies had been found in various stages of decomposition. The police had been alerted by a friend of one of the victims, a woman named Edna Loomis. The friend, Joanna Dodson, had not heard from Loomis for days, and had called the local cops when her concern became great. After 2 bodies were discovered in the barn, and another in the house, police found 3 additional bodies, including the corpse of Edna Loomis in the tunnel underneath the property. Joanna Dodson had mentioned the existence of the tunnel in her initial call to the police. The Out County Massacre, as it was immediately dubbed by the press, dominated the news for the next 3 days. A rumor surfaced that one of the victims was a D.C. cop, and then the rumor was publicly confirmed. Drugs and large amounts of money were said to have been found at the scene. A rumor also surfaced that the suicide of Eugene Franklin was also related, but this rumor remained unconfirmed. Strange went to work daily and kept to his normal routine. By the end of the following week, he welcomed the phone call that he knew with certainty would come.
"Hello," said Strange, picking up the phone. "Lydell here. You ready to talk, Derek?"
"Name the place."
Oregon Avenue, south of Military Road, led into a section of Rock Creek Park that contained a nature center, horse stables, and miles of hilly trails. A huge parking lot sat to the right of the entrance, where people met to train and run their dogs on the adjacent field. Strange and Lydell Blue sat in Strange's Caprice, parked beside Blue's Park Avenue in the lot and facing the field. Over a dozen large breed dogs ran and played in the field, all of their owners white, well off, and dressed in casual, expensive clothes.
"Should have brought Greco," said Blue.
"Greco's not a dog lover," said Strange.
Strange looked over at Blue.
"Tell me what you got, Lydell. You gonna be up front with me if I do? How long we been knowing each other, man?"
"Okay then, okay." Blue ran his thumb along his mustache. "The cops who found Eugene Franklin found a suicide note at the scene. More like a confession, really."
"You see the note?"
"Got a copy of it from a friend over in Homicide. Written with an ink pen on a plain white sheet of paper."
"What did the note say?"
"Franklin admitted that he and Adonis Delgado were on the payroll of that drug lord Cherokee Coleman. He detailed his role in the Chris Wilson shooting, how Wilson had gotten on to him and Delgado, and how Coleman had ordered a hit on Wilson. They used Ricky Kane, who was a drug dealer to the restaurant trade, not the clean-cut suburban boy the papers had made him out to be, to get Wilson out there in street clothes and made him look wrong. Franklin was supposed to shoot Wilson, but his partner, Quinn, who Franklin claimed was clean, shot Wilson first." Strange digested what Blue had told him. "The news people have been talking about these rumors that Franklin is somehow connected to the Out County thing." "Franklin put it all in note. Him and Delgado were sent by Coleman out to that property to make a drug transaction, and also to kill the 2 wholesalers, Earl and Ray Boone. Something about making it right for Coleman over 2 Colombians the Boones had murdered out there. That part checks out. 2 men were found in the tunnel on their property. Their death date much earlier than the date of death on the Boones."
"What about the Boones and Delgado? Who killed them?"
"Franklin claimed that he did. Claimed he had a crisis of conscience and had to end the whole thing the only way he saw fit. He and Delgado fought over it in the house, and they went at it, and he killed Delgado. Then Franklin went down to the barn and shot the father and son. He left the drugs and the money sitting in the barn and drove back to D.C. Ate his own gun the next day. There was a girl found in that tunnel, too. Edna Loomis died of natural causes. That is, if you call a woman having a stroke at 30 years old natural. Methamphetamine will do that to you. You ingest enough."
"Hell of a story," said Strange.
"Yeah. Trouble is, it doesn't check out."
"What's wrong with it?"
"Plenty of things. Start with the crime scene. Out at the barn, in the house. Okay, so Franklin says he had a change of heart, and he and Delgado got down to it. Why was Delgado naked then? And Delgado was stabbed.
Why wouldn't Franklin just go ahead and shoot him like he did the others?
I don't know.
They found a boot print tracking out of Delgado's blood, too. Size 12, I believe it was. Franklin wore 10.
What else?
The Boones were killed by the same type of gun, a Glock 17. But it was two different Glock 17s that killed them. The markings on the slug found in the body of the son, and another bullet found in the wood of the bar, were inconsistent with the markings of those found in the father and those found around the father. The trajectory angles were inconsistent, too. There were two shooters that night, Derek. Had to be.
No fingerprints, nothing like that?
No prints other than those of the deceased, Franklin, and another unidentified woman.
A woman, huh?
They found vaginal fluid and pubic hairs in the same bedroom where they found Delgado.
The Loomis girl?
Didn't match. But if there was some kind of phantom woman there, it explains why Delgado died in his birthday suit.
Sounds like y'all got a genuine head scratcher.
Uh-huh. Blue turned his head and stared at Strange.
Why'd you call me here, Lydell?
Well, Derek, I tell you. I got an anonymous package in the mail, no return address, mail-in label out of the printer, just like any of 1,000 printers in this city. Had Chris Wilson's investigation detailed in a notebook, and photographs of Franklin and Delgado heading into Coleman's compound. Blue took a sip of coffee.
That was you sent me that, right?
It was. Didn't take a genius to figure it. You had called me and asked me to run the numbers of Delgado's cruiser, remember?
I do.
So tell me how you came to get all that information. Strange shrugged. I was hired by Leona Wilson to try and clear her son's reputation. Among other things, she wanted his name etched into that police memorial they got downtown. I started by interviewing Quinn, and then Franklin, and the natural progression was to follow Ricky Kane and see what he was all about.
Okay, what'd you find?
Same thing Wilson did. Kane led me to Coleman, and that was when I noticed the same Crown Vic cruiser patrolling the perimeter of the operation on two separate days. I called you and got Delgado's name. I found Wilson's notebook and the photographs and mailed them off to you. See, I saw this thing was bigger than me, Lydell. I thought if y'all could connect the dots, Wilson's story would naturally get told. A couple of cops came forward, said they saw you and Quinn talking to Franklin down at Erica's.
That's right.
They're going to bring you in for questioning, man.
They're going to bring Quinn in, too.
You tell them I mailed you the information?
They don't even know I got it, said Blue.
The notebook and photographs? In the trunk of my Buick, man. Gonna give it all back to you before you leave.
You can't use it?
How could I explain the fact that it was sent to me in the first place?
You couldn't, I guess.
Either I'd have to lie or I'd have to implicate you. And those are two things I'm not gonna do. Anyway, the department doesn't need the notebook or the photographs to make the case. Kane's been picked up, what I hear. He's already rolled over, and he's confirmed the background information that was in Franklin's note. They're going to get him to turn Cherokee Coleman in exchange for some kind of country club jolt. Whether it sticks to Coleman or not, we'll see. Kane say how he got Wilson out on the street that night? Kane said he heard that Wilson had a sister was hooked on junk. He told Wilson he found her and to meet him on D. Did you know about the sister?
She lives with her mother. Everything their family had been through, I'd hate to see that junkie sister rumor get thrown out to the press.
We know what that family's been through. How Kane got Wilson out to the street that night is immaterial. Far as anybody's ever gonna know, sister's clean.
And Chris, what about him?
Yeah, Chris Wilson. It's delicate how the department's gonna handle that. For obvious reasons, they don't want too much play on this bad cop thing, and they don't want the public to think that what Wilson did, being some kind of rogue enforcer out there, is something they condone, exactly. In the end, I don't know how this will be spun for the general public, but I do know what they're saying about Wilson down at headquarters. He's going to get some kind of posthumous low-key commendation from Chief Ramsey.
Good. That's real good.
You stirred the pot, Derek.
I guess I did.
Funny about the other cop, Quinn, I mean.
Yeah.
He's not going to come out of this smelling any better than he did to begin with.
You think he should?
He made a mistake.
I've gotten to know Quinn a little, and I can tell you, he's still paying for what he did. I think he's always going to pay.
The afternoon sun had warmed the interior of the car. Strange shook Blue's hand.
So, the department's going to be calling me in.
Any day.
The way you just explained it?
What?
Something about it you didn't like?
It was just a little rough, is all. I'd work on it a little if I was you.
Strange returned to his row house and phoned Terry Quinn. He relayed the conversation he had with Lydell Blue.
I hate to lie to my friend, but I didn't know what else to do.
I guess Eugene destroyed the original confession, said Quinn.
Looks like he did. The one the police found was written on plain white paper. I'm fixing to destroy some things, too. Gonna lose the clothing I wore that night, my boots, my knife. You need to do the same. Get rid of your date pack and that Glock.
It's already done. On a Sunday morning in early April, when the cherry blossoms along the tidal basin were full and brilliant, and magnolias and dogwoods had erupted pink and white on lawns across the city, Strange, Janine, and Lionel met at church. Strange had not been to services in some time. He decided to go this day, the weekend after Easter, to pray for his mother, whose condition had recently turned for the worse. He knew that attending church for personal favors was wrong, but he went just the same. After the services, they all gathered outside.
"We going to that Greek joint for breakfast?" said Lionel.
"Billy's is closed today. It's his Easter Sunday."
"I was going to make a nice turkey," said Janine.
"Will you come over for dinner?"
"Was thinking I'd take Greco for a long walk down in Rock Creek. But yeah, I'd love to come for dinner, long as it's early. Need to spend the evening with my mom."
"We'll have it early then. See you around 5?
"Looking forward to it, Janine."
He kissed her there, in the cluster of azalea bushes planted beside the church.
"Look at y'all," said Lionel. "In front of God, too?"
Strange walked to his caddy, parked on Tuckerman. Along the curb on the other side of the street sat a gray Plymouth K car. Leona Wilson had opened the passenger door for her daughter, Sandra, who was ducking her head to get inside. Strange caught a quick look at Sandra, still thin and shapeless in her dress, her hair salon done and shoulder length, her eyes bright and a bit unfocused. Not there, but getting there, Strange could see. As Strange watched them, Terry Quinn's face flashed in his mind. He hadn't seen Quinn or spoken to him for quite some time. Strange sat behind the wheel of his Cadillac Brougham, parked on Bonifant Street in Silver Spring. Greco was snoring, lying on his red pillow in the back seat. Strange and the dog both had a bellyful of Janine's cooking inside them, and Greco had taken the opportunity to nap. Across the street, Terry Quinn locked the front door of the bookstore, checked it, and turned to go up the sidewalk. Strange leaned his head out of the window.
"Hey, Terry!"
Quinn found the source of the voice and smiled. He crossed the street and walked toward the car. Strange thought that Quinn had lost weight and realized that it was the hair that had given him the mistaken impression. Quinn had cut it short.
"Get in for a minute, man."
Quinn went around the caddy and dropped into the passenger seat. Greco woke, sat up, and smelled the back of Quinn's neck as Quinn and Strange shook hands.
"Derek!
Terry!
What brings you out this way?"
"Was thinking of you is all. Look at you, all clean cut. You look like a cop again."
"I know."
Quinn thumbed his lip.
"You said you were thinking of me. Why?"
"Well, we're friends for one."
"We're friends now, huh?"
"Sure."
"What else?"
"I saw Leona and Sandra Wilson the day at church." Quinn nodded.
"How's the girl doing?"
"You know what that road's like.
But her mother got her into one of the city's best programs. She'll make it, I expect."
"You did good."
"So did you."
Strange looked over at Quinn. Chris Wilson got the commendation. They did a quiet kind of ceremony, but he got it. And they put his name up on that wall.
"I heard about it."
"The department didn't get the press involved in it, but word reached me from inside."
"Yeah, the department's played the press pretty good on this whole thing. But what else are they going to do? They don't have all the answers their own selves. They know there's more, but they can't seem to get to it. They didn't get anything out of you and me."
Strange studied Quinn. I was thinking, you know, there are special instances when I could use another operative. You did some pretty good work with me, man. I was wondering, would you ever consider taking on a case for me now and again?
While you do the light work?
Funny. What about Ron Latimer? This time of year, Ron's busy picking out his spring wardrobe and shit. Haven't seen him much the last week or so.
I don't have an investigator's license.
Easy enough to get one.
I'll think about it, okay?
Sure. Do that. Greco licked Quinn's neck. Quinn turned in the seat and scratched the boxer behind his ears.
How's Janine?
She's good. Just left her and Lionel.
Spending a lot of time with her, huh?
Strange nodded.
Finally woke up. Was always looking for someone else, chasing after women who didn't care nothing for me. Always looking for something else, when the best thing was right next to me, staring me right in the face. Just like my mother said, not that I'm thinking of getting married or anything like that, but I do plan to be there for her and the boy.
Tell her I said hey.
I will.
Quinn looked at his watch. I better be going. Quinn reached for the door handle. Strange put a hand on Quinn's arm.
Terry.
What?
I just want you to know, in light of how all this ended up, I wanted you to know that I was wrong about you, man.
Quinn smiled sadly. You were wrong about some things, Derek, but not everything. Quinn stepped out of the car. Strange watched him cross the street in the gathering darkness. Terry walked up Bonifant and cut left on Georgia Avenue. The street lamps and window lights glowed faintly in the cool dusk. I lied to Strange, thought Quinn. I'm lying to myself. I am never going to change. I am never going to walk away. Quinn walked the wooden platform beside the fence that bordered the Canada Dry bottling plant. He turned, his hands dug in the pockets of his jeans, and watched the close approach of a northbound train. Quinn closed his eyes and listened to the sounds of the train, felt the rush of the cars raising wind and dust. He didn't come here for answers. There were no answers. There was only sensation. No answers, and there would be no closure. Chris Wilson had been exonerated, but for Quinn, nothing had changed. Because Strange had been right all along. Quinn had killed a man because of the color of his skin. Strange walked down the drab third-floor hall of the district convalescent home, passing a couple of female attendants who were laughing loudly at something one of them had said, ignoring a man in a nearby wheelchair who was repeating the word nurse over and over again. Strange entered his mother's room. She was lying on her side under the sheets of her bed, awake and staring out the window. He walked around to the side of the bed.
Mama, here I am.
His mother made a small wave of her hand and smiled weakly, showing him the gray of her gums. Her body was tiny as a child's beneath the sheets. She pointed past Strange's shoulder. He went to the window and looked to the corner of the ledge. A houseman had built a nest there and was sitting on her eggs. A small bird flew away at the sight of Strange. Strange knew what his mother wanted. He tore off several paper towels from the bathroom roll, found some scotch tape on a supply cart out in the hall, and taped the squares of paper to the window. His mother had done this every spring in the kitchen window of the house in which he'd been raised. She had explained to him that a mother bird was like any mother, that she deserved to tend to her children privately and in peace. From her bed, Althea Strange blinked her eyes with approval at her son, examining the job he'd done. Strange brought a cushioned chair over to the side of her bed and had a seat. He sat there for a while, telling her about his day.
Jenny. She's good, Mama. She sends her love.
Diamond?
In my backyard, yes, ma'am. I love you, Mama. I'm so proud to be your son.
As he talked, he held her hand and looked into her eyes. He was still holding her hand at dawn. and the birds were singing outside her bedroom window as she passed.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Right as Rain by George Pelecanos. Copyright 2001 by George P. Pelecanos. Recorded by arrangement with Little, Brown & Company. Read by Richard Allen. Performance copyright 2001 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, Post Office Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.